Your statement says, as a principle, the UNHCR always advocates for countries to grant protection within their own territory, regardless of how asylum seekers have arrived. Is Australia shirking that responsibility with this asylum agreement with PNG?
We're concerned that the net effect of the measures is that, for all intents and purposes, Australia ceases to be an asylum country under the convention for anybody coming to the country other than by air. So this is a very significant shift and change from the practices used by states around the world.
So given that under the plan it won't resettle refugees within its own territory, how can Australia not be shirking its responsibilities under the convention?
We've always said in relation to these transfer arrangements that, in fact, Australia and Papua New Guinea and also Nauru and the other arrangements have a shared international responsibility under international law, that the transfer arrangements don't actually affect the responsibility of Australia to ensure that effective protection is brought to anybody transferred. And that also covers, in our view, finding solutions for them. So I understand that there have been part of the policy statements that nobody will come to Australia, but we would nonetheless find that Australia is responsible for finding solutions for people who are refugees.
Well, how does this deal comply with Australia's international obligations to asylum seekers?
We have yet to see how the arrangements will play out, because nobody under the new arrangements has been transferred across to Papua New Guinea. But what we can say and what we know already is that the transfer to the current physical and legal environment in Papua New Guinea will raise very significant and indeed formidable challenges. The reports that we produced following visits to Manus Island in January and in June of this year identified a number of very significant shortcomings, both in the legal framework and human rights requirements, but also in the physical conditions for people being transferred. So there are many, many formidable obstacles ahead to bring these arrangements up to a standard that would meet international standards.
I want to get to your comments on the conditions at Manus Island in a moment, but if I can just take you back to Australia's international obligations under the Refugee Convention. In your statement, you say the focus must remain on finding ways that complement rather than undermine national asylum systems built on the fundamental principles of the convention. Does this deal with PNG undermine the convention?
It doesn't consolidate it. We think that, as the statement says, that states that have signed the convention that do have the resources should, as a matter of principle, conduct refugee status determination in those territories. Unless and until there are regional strategic arrangements in place of a comprehensive and multilateral nature. Now, in Europe, there is a very concrete set of responsibilities between different states that would allow countries to require other states to process, even though they may have landed on their own territory. So what we've said consistently is that if you are going to transfer people from one country to another, it has to take place within a very clear international agreed framework of responsibilities. Now, that's why we've been pursuing vigorously the regional cooperation framework in Southeast Asia, because we think that is the building blocks for the kind of collaboration that's needed. The arrangements in the Pacific are bilateral in nature and effectively result in a transfer of responsibility from Australia to countries which really do have challenges in trying to meet international obligations. And that's the cause of our concern for many years, is that we don't think that the Pacific Island nations, even with the best will in the world, have the capacity and experience to meet the required international obligations, which is also why we believe that Australia must retain those responsibilities.
So given that this is not a multilateral deal, it's not international under that definition that you just gave, this is a breach of Australia's obligations under the convention, isn't it?
Well, I would rather focus on the human rights implications and the protection standards that we're trying to achieve here. At the end of the day, the arrangements will be judged according to how successful they are in protecting the rights and integrity, human integrity of people transferred. The reports that we've already undertaken in both Nauru and also in Papua New Guinea show that there is an enormous amount of work that needs to be done, and that until such time as those standards are reached, Australia retains responsibility under the convention and under international law to make sure people are looked after. The deflection of responsibility to other countries in the current circumstances does cause us concern, not only in the region, but also the kind of precedent it does set internationally.
Well, your statement says that the Australia-Papua New Guinea Asylum Agreement presents protection challenges, as you mentioned. What are the challenges specifically?
Well, from our reports over the last 6 months, we've identified some shortcomings in the international, in the legal framework, domestic law. There is no adequate legal framework for receiving, processing of refugees as of today. There is no adequate legal framework to govern the access to detention facilities, as at the moment people who are held there are held in indefinite and what we found to be arbitrary detention, which is a fairly serious shortcoming. The psychosocial impact of people held in these conditions, these are remote, difficult conditions for people to live in physically. There are questions around the degree and quality of social service support in these environments. And until quite recently, of course, we had very serious concerns about the impact on families and children in particular. Now, we welcome the fact that children and families have been removed from those facilities because we did not believe that this was an appropriate place for people to be held. But what does concern us under the new arrangements is that there is an apparent open-ended commitment for the future transfer of children and particularly families to these facilities at the future. We need to find more details on that.
What are the specific protection standards and safeguards that this agreement raises in terms of serious questions that you say remain unanswered?
The standards that we believe apply are the same ones that we articulated when there were discussions 2 years ago around the Malaysian arrangement, and they were the same standards that we described when both Nauru and Papua New Guinea were designated as regional processing countries. Now, what we said in relation to that is that there had to be watertight guarantees that nobody would be expelled to face persecution. That's the what we call the non-refoulement principle. There had to be a right to an effective process for determining refugee status. There had to be some provisions for family unity in determining what is the best interests of children. Crucially, in this situation, we had to be satisfied that there were humane reception conditions, including protection against arbitrary detention. And freedom of movement for those who didn't need to be in detention was very important. And last but certainly not least, there had to be the opportunity for some sustainable and durable solution for granted refugees within a reasonable time frame. Now, there were shortcomings in relation to each of those aspects of the human rights benchmarks that were put in place.
Does the UNHCR have any power to insist on better protections by either country?
We've produced a number of reports over the past 6 months, and we're very pleased to note that both the governments of PNG and Australia have taken our most recent report on Manus Island. I know Immigration Minister Burke is up there at the moment or is recently back, and he was looking very closely at the kinds of comments and recommendations we were making. So we hope that those will play out in the way that these arrangements are now being negotiated between the two countries looking forwards.
Will the UNHCR be involved in the agreement in any way?
No, it's a bilateral arrangement between the two countries. We've always said that we don't particularly like the return to the Pacific. We believe that the proper investment needs to be through a very robust asylum system here in Australia, coupled and complemented by much more active international engagement in Southeast Asia, particularly with Indonesia and countries in the region who are truly affected by these issues. So we won't be involved in the bilateral arrangements, but we have been prepared to offer support in training for staff and resources in all countries in the Pacific. We'll also retain, as we have done in the past, the opportunity to go and carry out inspections and monitoring as required.
You say the integration of non-Melanesian refugees into PNG will raise formidable challenges and protection questions. What are they?
We've been operating and working very closely with the PNG government in Papua New Guinea for more than 30 years, dealing with West Papuan refugees, Melanesians, who have been well received by their Melanesian brothers across the border. And we've also been trying to do our best with a small number of non-Melanesian asylum seekers and refugees coming into the country. Now, to the best of our knowledge, there is very, very little opportunity for non-Melanesians to find durable solutions in Papua New Guinea. We've found it very, very difficult to find any kind of sustainable settlement options for people, and that's why in the past years Australia has been very helpful, in fact, in actually receiving resettlement refugees from PNG precisely because of the impossibility of integration there. So we're concerned now that this is reversing the logic with the assumption that somehow people who are determined to be refugees in PNG can find a sustainable integration solution there. There are many socioeconomic and cultural issues in PNG that are particular to that country, and people from the outside, particularly non-Melanesians, would find it enormously difficult to find sustainable integration.
So is it possible if they don't resettle adequately within PNG that these refugees could end up back in Australia? Is there any possibility of that?
That's really a matter for Australia, but what we've said consistently is that it's a shared international legal responsibility not only to transfer and process, but also to find solutions for refugees. The act of transfer physically does not divest the transferring state, in this case Australia, of the responsibility for ongoing protection. And if protection cannot be found in Papua New Guinea, and if protection can't be found through any other resettlement option to any other country, then we would think it logical that the residual responsibility rests with Australia.
So under the convention, under Australia's obligations under the convention, it could ultimately be held to account for these refugees if they're not adequately resettled in PNG, i.e. they have to take them back into Australia.
It's pretty clear that if the responsibilities under the convention maintain after the transfer, that those obligations will remain. If protection options can't be found somewhere else, then it's, the protection responsibilities rest with the transferring state. That's clear international law position.
Who assesses whether they are adequately resettled? Is that something the UNHCR does?
We're happy to provide advice. We've been involved in resettlement programs globally for the last 50 years, and Australia has always been a wonderful supporter of our international resettlement program. So the benchmarks and standards for integration and resettlement are fairly well developed, and Australia has always been a great proponent of credible, successful integration. So if we look at some of the standards that have been developed internationally, I think it would be fairly simple to see how effective it is to find solutions in Papua New Guinea.
But is that a legal challenge that a refugee could take to the courts to say, I can't be adequately protected here in PNG, as Australia being the one that sent me here, they have an obligation to now resettle me in their country? Is that a possibility?
I'm no expert on domestic law in Papua New Guinea to comment on what rights or of challenge there might be, but simply as the protector of the international refugee regime, we would say that the states have an obligation between themselves to find effective protection outcomes for recognised refugees. That's the nature of the convention. It's a multilateral treaty between states to divide between themselves responsibilities for protecting people. That's its purpose. And these are two convention states, and we would expect them to have a monitoring and collaborative effort to make sure that protection is found for each and every person.
Now, the UNHCR earlier in the year assessed conditions on Manus Island and highlighted significant inadequacies with the government's policy of offshore processing on Manus. What confidence do you have that these conditions can be improved under this new agreement?
I think that certainly with goodwill and investment, the improvements can be achieved in making the conditions better. We have no doubt that both governments are committed to improving the quality of conditions, but we simply don't want to understate or underestimate the enormity of the challenges of doing this effectively in such remote and challenging physical conditions. One can improve the legal framework, which I think there is work being done there, but if you couple open-ended mandatory detention in these facilities in the very difficult physical settings for long periods of time, it can very quickly translate to physical and psychosocial harm for people transferred. So we've seen this in the past, and that's one of the principal reasons why we think it's so challenging to do it effectively in the Pacific.
Are you asking the government to refrain from sending any more asylum seekers to Manus Island until conditions are improved?
We've said that. It's part of our statement, and it's also part of our bilateral discussions with government, is that we do not think that the current protection arrangements guarantee appropriate levels of treatment, standards of treatment for people in Papua New Guinea, and we don't think future transfers can take place unless and until those protections are in place. Now, we think it's useful to see those protection standards built into the arrangements themselves. It's helpful to have benchmarks built into the arrangements, because then objectively one can see how they're getting on. We also think it's useful to have a monitoring or oversight mechanism, such as the one that was recommended for the discussions with Malaysia 2 years ago. it's helpful to have oversight mechanisms to see progress in the legal and psychosocial and the health areas of this work. It's enormously challenging for governments to do it properly, and we recognise that both governments are doing their best to solve what is clearly a very difficult challenge.
These obligations that you mentioned, these oversight obligations, are these Australia's obligations under this agreement?
As I said, the physical act of transfer from Australia to Papua New Guinea does not affect Australia's responsibilities under international law to provide protection to people transferred. So it seems to us to make sense to have some kind of bilateral or multilateral oversight mechanism in the same way that there exists for Nauru at present to keep an eye on how progress is being made. And that's something we've suggested to both governments as a sensible way of monitoring progress being made and identifying shortcomings and trying to nip problems in the bud before they become much more serious.
Do you think that this deal with PNG is an attempt by Australia to deflect its responsibility under the convention?
We've said that in the past. We don't see that the arrangements in the past or even the current arrangements have the characteristics of genuine multilateral regional cooperation. They are offshore processing arrangements for Australia's purposes, If the appropriate protection standards are not in place, if appropriate arrangements are not in place for the sharing of the burden on durable solutions for recognised refugees, then they would be tantamount to a deflection of responsibility.
Is that a yes?
Well, I've just answered it.
You acknowledge the high number of boat arrivals. How can the number be lowered?
There's no quick and easy fix to this. I really want to be clear that UNHCR fully understands and sympathises with the problem that's being faced by Australia and indeed other countries in the region that are facing boat journeys of this magnitude. These are very dangerous journeys. They're exploitative and tragically many people are losing their lives. So action is clearly required, and we take no issue with the government's imperative on this. We've always believed that the centre of any response should be a robust asylum processing system. To suspend cases, to divert cases to other places is one response. We think it's best to let the Refugee Convention do what it was designed to do, and that is to allow states to determine quickly, rapidly, and indeed robustly who needs protection. If they need protection, then give it to them. And if they don't, if truly Australia is now receiving people who don't need international protection, then let's get on and process them and have them removed. And certainly UNHCR will not stand in the way of any robust attempt to remove people who are demonstrably not in need of international protection. So that's the first thing. We think a robust asylum system should be at the centre of the response. And secondly, we believe that there is a tremendous amount of practical collaboration that can be done with countries in Southeast Asia. All of those countries are very worried about irregular maritime movements, loss of sea, the tensions that this causes between themselves through the irregular movement of people. And the Bali process and other collaborative arrangements do provide a great deal of opportunity, not only for governments to help deal with the security and smuggling side of things, but also to try and find humane and humanitarian alternatives for people as well. And we think those are really where the real thrust of incentives and initiatives should be.
Richard Toll, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.